Welcome back, everybody. Hope you've had good Christmases. Lots of colds and stuff going around at the moment, but hopefully we're all on the mend. So I thought I'd kick off the year. We kind of scale it back. We've been a bit full-on Buddhist just lately, but with the Eightfold Path and stuff, I thought I'd bring it back down to kind of basics, if you like. So, I wanted to explore today what we call the five spiritual paths. Again, I sound a bit full on Buddhist, but hopefully I'll bring it down to earth. So, actually, it's kind of background is about cultivating mind state. And we've talked lots of times before about conducive states of mind for meditation and spiritual progress. And I thought we'd take this a little further with this area of the spiritual faculties. And it explores what they are and also why they drive a cultivation of a changed mind state. And the answer's fairly obvious when you start to look at them. I think it was probably the last time or the time before I drew this analogy of the mind like a water bottle. Where the bottle is the shape, the container, and the water, when it's poured in, it takes that shape. It has no choice, it has to. So whatever shape the bottle is, that's the shape the water will be. Fairly obvious. Less obvious with our minds, because our minds are very, very similar to this. The container itself is the mind. But what are we pouring in? There's a question, and we'll come back to that, actually. Something's definitely contained. And in a way, this particular thinking is around that container itself, the mind, not necessarily the water, which we'll explore. We can see this kind of behaviour at a very high level, macro level, if you like, in terms of cultures. So if you think of the Japanese people, they have quite a disciplined state of mind. Their mind, the Japanese mind, likes discipline. Discipline generally, it likes structure. These are general terms. There are obviously individual differences, but across the board, that's what they tend to be like. And what we saw, therefore, when Buddhism came out of China into Japan, it kind of moulded itself into that container. So you had the birth of Zen. Zen is very disciplined, very structured. still with the underlying principles of Buddhist practice, but it was absorbed by that container. Of course, when we moved to India, where Buddhism was born, we see a desire for understanding. There's a real need for understanding there, understanding about the mysteries of life and so on. But it's a much softer approach. And this comes out in the traditional Buddhist Theravada, which is very different to Zen. In Tibet, the history, thousands of years of history, kind of created a mind which has a very religious aspect to it. There's lots of ceremony and, dare I say, superstition. Tibetan Buddhism. To look at it from that sort of high level macro level. But then we come down to the personal level, the personal perspective. You'd think it would be a bit more mundane there, but actually, I think it can get complex. And we see this container effect happening. And we can experience it ourselves. Any day of the week, we just have to look at what's happened during our day. When you've got a day where you've been stressed out, you've been very, very busy, if you gently close your eyes, you'll find you've probably got quite a confused mindset. And actually, I love this feeling of scale with the mind. It's fascinating. When you have this confused, busy mindset, the mind feels small. It feels like it's constraining you. When you have a day which is calm and relaxed, and your mind is therefore calm and relaxed, if you close your eyes and you try and find the edges, you'll find it's vast. That's quite interesting. Just by having a busy day or a calm day changes the size of our container. It's quite interesting, isn't it, really? And that has a big effect on our success with meditation, if you like, and how the meditation will go, and actually therefore have a big effect on our spiritual practice. So Buddhist practice explores this aspect through its five spiritual factors. And we can kind of view them as two vertices, actually. Cross, if you like. I've drawn a picture, but I've got. So the one axis has, and we've talked about it before, samadhi, which is meditation, concentration, absorption, if you like. So you can see that at the top, north, if you like. And its opposite is virya, which is energy, enthusiasm, interest. Yeah. So you've got very sort of meditative state, very concentrated, and then you've got an energetic state, an enthusiastic state. And the two are kind of 180 degrees apart. And then you've got another vertices, which is, you can look at it east west. This is Shraddha, which is faith, confidence, letting go.
Somebody's agreeing with this.
Absolutely. And then the other side, you've got Pranya, which is insight, wisdom, intelligence. So another 180 degree split, if you like. We can look at our own mindset and start to think about where we sit on this. We can view these vertices, and we won't necessarily be one end or the other, we'll be somewhere. Will give us a view as to the underlying tendencies which draw us one way or the other. And of course, during our day, they can potentially change for short periods of time. We can drift one way or the other, depending on influences in our lives, whatever's going on. But I think actually each of us will have an underlying tendency towards one of those.
Space is available.
Everything's a marketing opportunity. And there we start to delve down a little bit for our tuning into very complex different types of person that we can be. But here we're looking at just the nature of your mind. What is our container like? And we can look at these states and start to understand how they affect us and actually how they colour our view of the world. Let's remember, part of our practice is to remove any veil that's in front of us and try and see the world exactly as it is, to connect with it more deeply. So, of course, if our mind state is getting in the way, then we need to think about that and to think about, is there any way to remove that? Sounds easy, doesn't it? So, for example, if we are drawn by samadhi, we tend to be a very meditative, concentrated, absorbed type of person. Actually, we might find we tend to be rather withdrawn from the world, inward looking. We don't connect very well with the people and the world around us. So there's a feeling of disconnection there if we have too much general samadhi state in our lives. However, if we're too drawn by virya, that state of energy, enthusiasm, interest, that's me, by the way. Get it? We may find that our approach to the world is, well, frankly, rather haphazard, chaotic, and although we connect with people, we frustrate the hell out of them because of our lack of focus. Okay. So then, if we come to the other axis, if we strive too much with Shraddha, which is this idea of faith and confidence, just letting go with the world, we may feel as though we can gain a deep religious understanding. But it can be misguided. People with too much Shraddha, too much faith, have a tendency to believe everything they're told. And they tend to be misled by teachers, actually. There's lots of dubious teachers out there. They'll just believe it. They tend to be very emotional, so the emotion of the moment carries them forward. We're even aware when we're in that state that this is actually happening. And interestingly, if you look at this particular sector of therapy, you do tend to see many practitioners who actually exist in that state. They find it very difficult to see the value of scientific methods of Western medicine, because it doesn't fit in with their mind state, and they rebel against it. Conversely, if you've got too much prana, too much wisdom, too much insight, too much, you know, thinking process, if you like, you'll tend to miss the spiritual. You'll potentially miss the emotional side of the experience. And again, here with Western medicine, we see examples of doctors who see the value, who know the value of complementary medicine. But we also see, examples of where doctors rebel against it. I guess at a very high level, we've seen one recently in politics where we've seen budgets for counselling services and work with mental health. Those budgets have moved out of the NHS and into the council funding because obviously the mental state of the people that were controlling things, looking after budgets in the NHS, felt that actually dealing with mental health counselling, the soft skills required, energy, emotion, didn't quite fit. So we'll let the councils have that. I'm not sure how well that's working, really. So what do we do about all this? Well, that's four states. There is a fifth, and it's sitting right in the middle. Sati. Mindfulness. So this kind of balanced state, if you like, it's an interesting one because you could look on it as a mind state. If you're smack in the middle, you're in a very balanced state. But mindfulness is more about the practice of noticing your position and noticing the colour and the flavour it's adding to your experience, and just kind of making allowances for that and deliberately balancing. So I guess it can be seen as a kind of pull into the middle. We're trying to attract ourselves into that middle state more. And I'm not sure really there's many of us that would just naturally exist in that centre state. We've all got a bit of colour and complexity in our lives, and maybe as we progress in Buddhist practice, I don't know, maybe we end up there, who knows. We'll find out, I guess. So it is a state of knowing and acknowledgement of the influence of these other four states. And with it comes absolute honesty. Now, it's really important to note that this is about looking at ourselves, others actually. It's completely irrelevant to look at others, because, of course, it's easy to see from the examples we've just given, if we look at others, how our own mind state will influence our view of what they are. So we're not going to see it clearly anyway. So the only way to do it is to really look at ourselves. We can look at the doctor and say, it's obvious you need to consider the emotional energy in the treatment of your patient. That's blindingly obvious. But that very criticism is inevitably influenced by our own mind state. So we have to look at who we are and where we are on this axis. Exclusion of others, actually. I was thinking about this when I was contemplating this talk. And there's a real parallel here with the Christian tradition. It comes from Matthew 7, verse 5, where Jesus says, "You must remove the plank from your own eye before you try to remove the speck from your brother's." And when you read that verse, you know, the first conclusion is, oh, this is kind of, it's a very strong message about hypocrisy. I think it goes deeper than that. I think, you know, what's been said is actually you simply cannot stand a chance of even seeing what the other person's challenges are unless you clearly see your own. So it's got a much softer feel to me than critical hypocrisy, if you like. So it challenges us to look at all aspects of ourselves. And to do that, I think to use this framework of the five spiritual faculties is a good starting point. There's a lot more involved, obviously. We're probably going to get some elements of it talk, but it is a good structure to start with, to start looking at our own container and see what's going on. The very basics, the water bottle, if you like, and how that's starting to influence us. So we come back to that container. And talked about the fluid that's poured into it. We can perhaps consider that fluid now. So what is the fluid we're talking about here? So we've talked about the mind, that's the container. But what is actually being poured in? Actually, I spend a lot of time with this in my own practice. I find it a fascinating area. I'm in the place where I believe the fluid is pure awareness. And a lot of my practice these days, I focus on the nature of awareness. What is it? What is awareness? And I ask myself that question. There's a very, very nice, simple koan which you can ask yourself. Koans come from the Japanese tradition. They're kind of analogous questions. And this one is, what is my awareness? Where is my awareness? Who is my awareness? And you just ask those five questions to the mind and see what pops up. You know, who's watching? Kind of feels like it's us, but when you get into meditation, actually, that starts to change, because here you are sitting there watching yourself think, you're watching yourself feed your emotions, those transpire into the body. Those feel very real, but you discover you can step outside of them and look at them. So you can look at the process of thinking, you can look at the process of emotion. That's awareness. So who's that? You know, what's watching? This pure awareness is very interesting. You pour that into the bottle, and if the bottle's a bit dented, it's going to affect the nature of that awareness. I think we're making huge strides forward as humans in the understanding of emotional health and mental health, but there's a hell of a long way to go. And already we understand that if the organ that contains the mind, the brain, if it has chemical imbalances, that disrupts the mind. So we end up with functions giving problems like depression. You know, that can come in. And we can treat it by balancing those chemicals out of drugs. So we know that if that container is a bit bent and dented, it affects the nature of mind. So there's a lot, I think there's a long way to go with that to really get to grips with what's going on here. But for us as individuals working with ourselves, because that's all we can do, we have to try to get to the place where the container is kind of pure and undented as we can possibly make it. That's our challenge. And, you know, sometimes we won't be able to do it by ourselves. We'll need professional help from counsellors, therapists, to help us remove the dents, perhaps. But we can work on ourselves. And it's through the practice of mindfulness, through this unjudging, open, caring, total, honest, bare attention, where we sit and look at where we are and concentrate. That concentrate word is fascinating, and I've been talking a lot this week in the Qigong and the Tai Chi about it, because you know, when we think about concentration, normally we think about thinking. Ooh, I've got to do my account. Concentrate on my account. There's a hell of a lot of thinking going on there. In practice and meditation, when we concentrate, we unthink. We don't think. We're being aware. We're just being aware with bare attention. So it's a very different type of concentration that we're talking about. We just sit and look as honestly as we can. So this is what we're going to be talking about today in meditation. And it is about just developing habit again, a habit of mind watching. When we sit on the cushion, we get used to examining the container, seeing what it's like, so that when we get out into our world, we don't stop doing that. You know, we're thinking about how the world is perhaps potentially denting our container, and what we can do about that. Actually, that subject we're talking about next week, the worldly winds. But this is what we can do inside, the work we can do inside. So we shall use to settle ourselves and essentially take the lid off our container so we can pour our awareness in its purest form, and then develop the habit of mindfulness with just sitting. We're just going to let the awareness come away from the breath and just sit with the mind state and see what's going on. Okay? There we go. Any questions?
Loads. How does that, these ideas, I've just been reading something about existentialists, and every time I do it, I get more confused. You know.
Yeah.
There's a limit to life for the existentialist. There is no before, there's no after.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Yeah.
And yet, all of these philosophies have some similarities and say, use the word spiritual,
yeah,
which presumably means beyond my death.
Oh, that's a massive subject. It's a doozy. It's a doozy, but yeah, I mean, we don't. Yeah, okay, so. Okay, so the first question is, I don't know for sure. I don't remember my past lives, although I did have an inkling once deep in meditation, but that's a subject for another day. I also don't know what happens after my death, in truth. But there are some lovely, lovely theories that have been presented by Buddhist thinkers. And it's not as nihilistic as it sounds. Yes, this view that we are dependent arising, that's the ultimate Buddhist view, if you like. And I'll do another talk on it at some point, because it's a deep topic. But dependent arising says, at this point in time, we are the sum of everything that's gone before. So there's no pure permanent being that's actually all the time. There's no permanence. We are pure beings of impermanence, being reborn every 64th of a finger snap, actually. Never the same person. And we know that at a physical level, because if you were that size when you were born, your mother would have had something to shout about. So your body, your physical body, is very, very different. Most of us therefore come to the mind and consciousness, and perhaps that's where our permanent self is. But in Buddhist meditation, when you go looking for that, which we do, you find just impermanent. You don't find a permanent self. There are aspects of us which carry on after our death. We've set up the Sangha house. You never know. After our death, it might carry on. Therefore, of us, our characters, potentially will carry on for some time. So that sounds a bit nihilistic. But a Buddhist thinker, Charlotte Yoko Beck, wrote a lovely analogy of this, and I think it's perfect. She describes a great river flowing down a valley. And if you look at that river, you will see whirlpools arise in the river. And they seem to have character. Some of them will be big, some of them will be small, some will spin fast and have lots of energy. Some of them will be slow and deliberate. And you could even give them names. And of course, if those pools, those whirlpools that have now become almost visibly disconnected from the river, if they had character, if they had conscious minds, they could potentially feel disconnected. But eventually, they run out of energy and they flow back into the river. And of course, the truth is, they were never separate from the river in the first place. And that nails the view of Buddhist practice. Actually, it's this view that we were never born in the first place, and therefore we'll never die.
However you represent yourself, you represent yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah. Mm. But we should go and have a go, shouldn't we? I think. Okay. Let's head on up. This is about as close as we'll ever get to an objective in meditation, but try to remember what we're trying to do here. So just to, at the start of the meditation, to kind of start with developing a general awareness of where you sit with that mind state. And then using the practice of meditation itself to see if you can balance yourself out to move more perhaps towards that centre, using the breath, using your awareness of the body, and just that gentle, natural awareness process itself. Okay, so settling down. And we close our eyes. First of all, we'll just start with our little Buddhist mantra. Do feel free to join in or just enjoy listening to it. Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dhammaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Nama, Am Hung. So awareness of the room around you, feel the space. And even here, we can take a look at our mind state in terms of scale. So feeling the space of the room, feeling the space of our mind, getting an idea of that scale. Just noticing. And we'll start with the body scan to bring us into the moment. Taking our minds down into our feet. Our awareness. Paying attention to the sensations that we find there. An interest. And even here, as we do the body scans, we work through the body. Just notice how you're doing it. Are you perhaps quite cerebral in your process, trying to understand where you are in the body and what its nature is? Or have you got a feeling of letting go? Are you intense, or are you energetic and have a desire to dart around? Is the mind wanting to pull away all the time? As you work across the foot and up through the ankle bones, and work gently up through the shins and the calf muscles. And up into the knees. All the time taking an interest in the sensations we find, but also in how we're going about taking that interest. What is our awareness like as we progress? And we move up across. across the thighs and the hamstrings. And into the sitting bones, settling down into the seat. As we sink and settle, just allow the head to float up a little, bringing a sense of strength and purpose into the posture. Let's take our awareness into our stomach and heart area. Just take a look at your emotion. How are you feeling? Subtle pulls of tension from different emotional states. And into the shoulders, letting them go. Take that awareness down the arms and into the hands and the fingers. And come back up to the head. Exploring sensations there. And then into the face. Just let compassionate gaze behind the eyes relax out the muscles in the face. Bring all of these sensations together. Sitting in this space. If you're a visual person, perhaps imagine yourself sitting at the center of those four vertices, right in the middle of the compass. Looking out, seeing what your mind is like. So we're going to establish a sense of stillness first and help us with our observation. So we bring our awareness to the breath, just as it is. Feel it wherever it's most obvious. And on each out-breath today, we're going to use the word settle. So on each out-breath, just hear yourself in your mind echo the word settle. And let that have its effect on the body and on the mind. Breathing gently, let go of thoughts, settle. Just the breath. Settle. Now let go of the word. But still with our awareness on the breath, we can start to understand our mind state by looking at our relationship between that awareness and that breath. Seeing the nature of our concentration, seeing the nature of our awareness as we study the breath. As you watch the breath, is your awareness concentrated, single-pointed, or is the mind dancing, being pulled away? As you watch the breath, do you feel emotion, excitement, a feeling of letting go into the breath? Or is the thinking, are you theorizing, looking at the different elements of the breath? Don't think about where you sit on those axes. Just feel. Now, let the breath go. Shift your internal gaze slightly upwards, as if you're looking at the moon. Just take a look at the nature of your own mind and its mind state. Just sit with it. Just sitting, asking yourself, what is my mind like? Just allow your mind, your awareness to come back to the room, feeling the space around you and awareness of friends sitting with you. And we can offer ourselves a silent resolution to take this practice of mind watching, this desire to see what goes on, what we are, out into our day. like ripples in a pond, we make a difference. Om Mani Padme Hum. And when you're ready, open your eyes.